The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Last year, the Biden administration urged healthy children to get yet another COVID shot despite the lack of any clinical data to support the repeat booster strategy in children.
That ends today. It's common sense and it's good science.
There's no evidence healthy kids need it today, and most countries have stopped recommending it for children.
We're now one step closer to realizing President Trump's promise to make America healthy again.
Produced by the U.
Making America healthy again. Doesn't that seem like a common sense, common ground issue? And yet the headlines today continue with, oh, MAHA problems, how to mitigate MAHA. The headlines continue this morning as the MAHA report was released. We told you about that. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We've talked about that when we talked about the recent announcement. And let's bring in investigative journalist and specifically talking about health, everything medical news, Emily Kopp joining us again. Hey, Emily, thanks for being here today.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you.
Absolutely. So we saw that you had given some headlines when that MAHA report came out. You had gone through the 69 plus pages and look through it. What strikes you in that as you look at the report? And then as well, there seems to be this pushback even against the report and in general, the Make America Health movement.
Yeah, I think, as someone who has reported on health issues for a long time, that was sort of remarkable to see sort of the government putting its stamp on something that dug into a bunch of long-term issues that are making Americans sick, food additives, issues with conflicts of interest in scientific publishing, a bunch of issues that were sort of taboo to talk about not that long ago, but that really quickly, just in the last few months, we've seen sort of ushered to the forefront of American political discussion. It's sort of remarkable.
And, we'll continue the conversation with Emily Kopp, investigative reporter, Daily Caller News Foundation. I should never assume that everybody knows who you are, but I think most do, Emily. But, in this case, you made the headlines, and I'll just talk about this for a second. You made headlines, even received really praise from, the New York Times, other national publications for your coverage of the pandemic, COVID. You were right. You got things right. And that's, I think, because of your due diligence. And it's not really political or one side or the other side. For you, when you think of the latest news as far as the additives, and so the latest was, the additives in foods like Skittles, in foods like Campbell's soups, or what's the other one, Gatorade, that sort of thing, talking about the color, making the colors brighter. When you see this, and you're somebody who has looked into this, you've covered it a lot, why do you think that there's such a pushback on this from even within journalism, even within media outlets?
Yeah, you would think it'd be sort of non-controversial that we shouldn't be putting, petroleum in the food that we eat every day. But I think a lot of the media suffers from Trump derangement syndrome. So if Trump says it's a good thing, then it must be a bad thing. So the connection I like that you're making sort of with COVID and sort of this new MAHA movement, I think, is that people's trust in these institutions like the NIH and the FDA and the CDC and these major medical journals that we used to think of as being really prestigious and rigorous were revealed to be wrong on these critical issues again and again, and sort of also be incapable of course correcting after, plenty of evidence show that they were wrong. And so I think I don't know that you would have MAHA without COVID, because it's sort of opened the door to take a second look at all of these issues, including this food dye issue, which, I mean, was a total sleeper issue a year ago, and now everyone sort of is aware, you know, that food colorings like, you know, red 40 are associated with behavioral issues in children like ADHD. You had Skittles announcing yesterday that it was going to remove titanium dioxide from its candy. Who knew a year ago that Skittles had something called titanium dioxide in it that could cause cellular and DNA damage? That's sort of disturbing. There's, you know, another additive called the propylparaben. I can barely pronounce it. That messes with people's hormones. And a lot of these are unstudied because the FDA has this process called generally recognized as safe or GRAS, where in order to have certain additives, you don't need to prove that they're safe. The FDA kind of throws up its hands and says, if we see a safety signal, we'll do something about it. But then its reporting mechanisms for reporting these safety issues are also very poor. So it's sort of a see nothing, say nothing approach by the FDA on these food additives. And of course, with MAHA, it's, you know, now in the public consciousness. So,
yeah, and full disclosure, I will tell you that years ago, because I married a single dad. And so years ago, my stepson, Jonathan, I asked him if it was okay if I told this story when he was, you know, a teenager. And they had said that he had some different issues that were ADHD-like, or maybe, you know, behavioral, sleeping issues, all these different issues that were mild. But teachers at school said, you know, you might want to watch this. So we took him to a specialist who said, Jonathan, what's your favorite food? And he said, oh, I love Fruity Pebbles. And she said, oh, ho, ho. You know, because he loves Fruity Pebbles. Well, and that's, honest to God, that's where I learned about this. It was years ago. And she told us, she said, look at all the labeling, anything with these dyes, the red dyes, the yellow dyes, get it out of your house. So sure enough, we did. And since that day, he's watched it. All of those issues vanished. And so to me, when I read this, Emily, now in the headlines, I think, man, this is just catching up with what I think a lot of really good doctors suspected or knew, neurological things, things that change your DNA, mess with your DNA. This is scary stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great doctor that doesn't just sort of, you know, shuffle off someone to a pharmaceutical intervention, but actually looks at the potential causes. I'd say there are a lot of issues in here that I think people who have been paying close attention have known about and have tried to raise a red flag about. And I think it's remarkable to see that all in this sort of comprehensive report with the White House's stamp of approval on it. I did some reporting years ago about how a lot of the patient advocacy groups like the American Diabetes Association take a lot of money from the pharmaceutical industry and tend to do advocacy that aligns with their interests. And I was surprised to see that report cited here, you know, because it was, when I was doing that reporting, sort of a sleeper issue. And not many people were saying, you know, if they were, quote, one of these patient advocacy groups saying, hey, this drug is great, this drug is the answer, versus, you know, another intervention like limiting sugar, you know, no one would ever disclose like, oh, and by the way, they took this amount of money from the drug industry or big food. But now obviously awareness is increasing. So.
Yeah. And in this one, we I'm on since 6 o'clock this morning. So we did discuss the titanium dioxide and how it, you know, these types of ingredients, the suggestion here, these nanoparticles, it messes with and damages your DNA, can cause cancer, all these health problems, damages your immune system, the nervous system. I mean, the list goes on and on. But, you know, in my mind, I think, and you're talking about, Emily, the different maybe companies or agencies, but in truth, isn't this a big lobby? I mean, isn't it on, I mean, we have some doctors in Congress And so these lobbyists certainly reach our congressional members, right? And to me, these things are banned in, for example, in the EU for what, the past 4 years they've been banned. And yet here in this country, we allow it. I mean, at some point, it just feels like our own government has been poisoning us.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a big part of it. I think, the most generous interpretation that maybe you could come to is that we had a need to mass produce a lot of food. And so the goal was feed everybody and make sure nobody goes hungry. And we weren't necessarily looking at how those efficiencies had these other costs in terms mm-hmm. of our long-term health. So these food companies did a great job making sure, you know, nobody goes hungry, producing a lot of food cheaply. But I think the science is catching up and the awareness is catching up that that is not cost-free in the long term. And something I like, too, about sort of the MAHA approach is that, you know, it even says in the report that, you know, we don't support these top-down European-style kind of business throttling regulations. We just want to empower people with information and let you know, to make sure that you can make the best decision about your own health.
Yeah.
So, I think that's really important too. And it relates to some of the recent decisions around childhood vaccination as well, which is also mentioned in the report as something that deserves a closer look.
Continuing the conversation with Emily Kopp, who's, of course, a great investigative journalist at the Daily Caller News Foundation. You know, I saw that you had reposted a local friend of mine, Meg Brock, who is a local Bucks County mom who obviously has come to national recognition, which I'm thankful for, a mom who just really wanted answers during the pandemic shutdowns here in Pennsylvania that were among the strictest ones. I just wonder, what was the motivation? You reposted something Meg posted. She said RFK told medical professionals to read with care HHS's comprehensive review on child gender dysphoria. What prompted you to repost that?
I think much like many of the COVID decisions, there was a top-down messaging that, hey, this is accepted science, and if you don't agree with it, then you're kooky or not aligned with these, once prestigious medical associations. And then you take a second look and you realize that these medical associations are increasingly radical and ideologically motivated, and that the science just isn't there to support these experimental interventions, whether you're talking about child sex changes or, COVID vaccines that remain under emergency use authorization for children under 11. The science is not ironclad in the way that some of the top-down leaders say. And the administration is not afraid to, suffer some bad headlines from the legacy press in order to call that out.
So for you, Emily, are you heartened by, the new age, if you will, calling out, just calling out what happened in the past? Because we're at the end of the day, I think we can all agree, or I think I hope that we can all agree, that we want, as Americans, to trust in our institutions, to trust the media, journalists, to trust the government. If they say, hey, something's going on health-wise, we want to restore that. And so with everything you see, are there some issues that, as you cover this day-to-day, hour-by-hour, with the NIH, with MAHA movement, with the HHS, what do you see here as far as positive improvements or even if you have a criticism of what they're doing?
I guess I'll do both. I think as far as the criticism, I do wonder if there is a tension between some of the efficiencies that they're trying to achieve and some of these ambitious EOs. So, you know, there's news this morning that some of the citations in the MAHA report are sloppy. I think there is a tension between getting people to execute these really ambitious EOs and the goals on efficiency. And I'm learning a lot in the last few weeks about the bureaucratic hurdles that prevent, you know, a democratically elected president and his chosen appointees from getting their people into the deep state, so to speak. And I think we discussed this the last time I was on. But you have people like Jeffrey Tobenberger, a major advocate for making viruses more deadly in the lab, working for Jay Bhattacharya, who has said repeatedly that he wants to end just that sort of research. And so I think one criticism I would have is better tackling this problem of like wanting to have government efficiency and cut costs, but also get your people in there. And I think maybe it'll take novel legal strategies or flouting convention, but just really taking on the deep state and not being afraid to get the good people in there to execute these like very ambitious executive orders. And then the praise, I think I would just reiterate that I appreciate that this administration is not afraid of weathering bad mainstream media headlines in order to bust open the Overton window on a bunch of issues, but, you know, including these health issues that if you've been paying close attention, you know, are often corrupt and not based in science. But we've been told by a complicit media and by ideological medical associations and by corrupt scientific journals and corrupt academia that it's all one way. And I appreciate that the Overton window is opening on all of these issues and we can really take a hard look at the science behind what's making us sick. So so that's a major win.
Yeah, definitely. And that latest one I saw this morning, the so-called mainstream media just saying, what? They're questioning The Lancet? And all of these, and The Lancet, remember, that was the one that published that horrible report on autism back in the day. What was that, 20 years ago? That was in The Lancet.
Bingo. Yep. And The Lancet is also sort of infamous for, in February 2020, publishing something that said, there's no way COVID came from a lab. And if you think that, then you're xenophobic and didn't disclose that the entire publication had been organized by a collaborator of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So a lot of black eyes recently for The Lancet. And no, it's interesting, the MAHA report even quotes several former top editors at these major scientific journals saying that they have a conflict of interest problem. So Kennedy is not saying anything that is kooky or off the wall. He's saying the quiet part out loud and busting taboos, and as can be expected, the legacy media doesn't like it. So
well, I think it's good for us. Hey, you're good for us. Emily A. Kopp, you want to follow her at Emily A. Kopp on X. Thanks so much for joining us again. Until next time, we always appreciate your time. Thanks, Emily.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.